Welcome to the Air Force Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos.
Hello, and welcome to today's program. I'm Eric White. Flight simulators go back almost as far as flight itself. Simulator technology keeps advancing so it's more realistic and more relevant to conditions pilots will eventually face. Now the Air Force Life Cycle Management Center Simulator Division is looking to small business to advance simulators even further. For details from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Federal News Network's Tom Temin spoke with Major Patrick Kowanchik and Colonel Philip Carpenter.
Why don't we start with what you mean by simulator? And by that question, I mean, I think of simulators as big, giant machines which rock around and tilt and look like the front of an airplane. But simulators are much more than that nowadays, aren't they? Colonel Carpenter?
Simulators are much more. And so when we start talking about simulators, we generally think about the training devices and all the training devices that our program office has. And just so for a little bit of context here for you, I'll just give you a really brief overview of the scope of our activity. So we have a program office that's about 500 folks, so 500 folks strong. We have 60-plus programs in our program office, and when I say programs, they're basically training programs, and they range from anywhere from the simple, so it could be, a simple training device, all the way up to what you just described as in like the full-motion training system. So they pretty much span the entire universe of complexity from simple to complex. And then we basically support 8 MAGCOMs across the entire Air Force. We have 2,300 training devices worldwide, and we're at probably more than 100 bases around the Air Force.
And are these training systems associated with given types of aircraft individually?
Right, yeah, and that's a great question. So they are. They're associated with anywhere from, like, in the way we're organized is in terms of supporting, like, the combat air forces, so fighters and bombers. Then we have mobility systems that we support, so tankers, airlifters. And then we also have our SOF, Special Operations Forces, and AETC aircraft that we support. And on the SOF side, we have things like, you know, AC-130s, MC-130s, so basically the soft aircraft, CV-22s, and then for our AETC customers, we have basically the white jets, the T-38s, the T-1s, T-6s, things along that lines, the basic training kinds of aircraft simulators.
And so in undergoing training, an airman hoping to fly or getting recertified or getting better at flying a given craft could be sitting in a full motion simulator, or they could be sitting in front of a screen, depending on the particular type of training.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, and I think, again, full motion trainer system, I think, as you sort of alluded to earlier as well, it's like literally being in an airplane. So, and the example I often like to use is C-17. I mean, that C-17 simulator, I was in it last week. And again, as you sit there in that system, I mean, the visualizations, the motion, every aspect of that simulator is almost like being in the real airplane. In contrast, that, again, as you described with the screen, we have an RPA trainer down at Randolph, and essentially it's got kind of a model of a cockpit, but they're sitting in front of a screen. There's no motion whatsoever, and it's really basic airmanship. So again, it spans the spectrum all the way from, like I say, really simple to, you know, highly complex.
And by the way, what about drone aircraft training?
Yeah, so again, that we do have some drone training aircraft capability as well. And again, I would say those are a little bit simpler, and simpler only in terms of, like, there's no motion associated with them. They're equally complex, but the simplicity is that in terms of a drone, you essentially use the same ground control station that you would normally use for a training environment. And in certain cases, you can essentially just plug that into, you know, a device and get the training there.
Before we get to the particular pitch to small business that you have out, what does the Air Force and what does this command seem to feel is the shortcomings in current technology for simulator? What would you like them to do, simulation systems to do, that they don't do now?
I think we probably would like to see some improvements, and again, I think Major Kowanchik will touch on that a little bit, especially in terms of those focus areas. But the focus areas that we're looking for, you know, visualization, artificial intelligence, interoperability, those kinds of things. And I probably would say right now one of the biggest things is interoperability, making sure that, as I mentioned before, I mean, we have 60-plus programs in our portfolio. And it would be ideal if those programs were much more interoperable. I mean, we do have some degree of interoperability, but improved interoperability is something that we're really trying to focus on. The other thing we're really trying to focus on is innovation and agility. So again, I think this pitch day is something really that's going to help us with that innovation, bring more innovation into our portfolio. And then agility, again, trying to do things much more quickly. But the reality is all of this is in the context of trying to increase our warfighter readiness and lethality, because that's really what we really strive to do, is it's about warfighter readiness and lethality.
Major Kowalczyk, you want to elaborate on some of the focus areas that you're hoping to improve simulation for?
Yes, absolutely. So like you mentioned, we have a number of focus areas in our pitch day request. We asked small businesses to propose options for us, so how we can improve our simulator interoperability, artificial intelligence-aided instruction, cutting-edge display technologies, lightweight open architecture simulators, performance-based training, data collection analysis. These are all opportunities for small businesses to utilize some of these commercially available innovative technologies and then use those for military applications. So all the small businesses that applied for our pitch day request, they don't typically work with the military, and this is their opportunity to come start working with simulators.
And just a detailed question, when you mention interoperability, what do you mean by that? Interoperability among what?
Great question. So we have a variety of United States Air Force platforms, and they operate on a network. And you know, one platform is built by one contractor, another platform simulator is built by another defense contractor. And so when you, for example, look down through the clouds, one simulator, you may be able to see the ground, and in another simulator, you may not be able to see the ground because the clouds are not being displayed the same on each simulator. So there's a challenge there with getting multiple defense contractors to work together and play nice together, is how we say it here.
All right, and so you are seeking some help from small business. Describe what it is you've got in terms of what you're asking for and how you're asking.
Right. So we're working with AFWERX, and AFWERX is a small organization. They have three innovation hubs in Austin, D.C., and Vegas. They work with very closely with Air Force Research Lab and the Small Business Innovation Research Fund. And so we're using SBIR funds to ask for phase one proposals, which is typically a customer discovery phase for all of these focus areas I just mentioned. And so we received dozens of proposals that span across all of these focus areas over the last 2 weeks.
Briefly describe AFWERX for those that aren't aware of this particular innovation cell in the Air Force.
I can tell you that they report directly to the Vice Chief of Staff of the Air Force, and there's three innovation hubs from Austin, D.C., and Vegas. And specifically for us, we've been working with the Austin AFWERX Innovation Hub.
You're looking at small business, and what is it initially that you're asking them to do? It sounds like more proposals and ideas than particular technologies and approaches.
Right. So I mentioned a phase one award is what we're looking at here, the customer discovery phase. These small businesses haven't worked with Simulators Division and probably anyone within the United States military before. So they don't really understand our challenges or what exactly we want them to do. So they spend that first 90 days or so researching, networking, talking to various organizations. Well, here's what we can do. What do you need? What can we do for you? So here's some of our technologies. Let me learn more about your problems. We call that the customer discovery phase. So after a phase one award is completed, they have a report as a reporting period. We look at the reports, and we give them an opportunity to propose a phase two proposal. And in a phase two proposal, they take their commercial capability and they potentially may provide a prototype or possibly integrate their capability into a platform-specific prototype. And then finally, a phase three award, if they're successful in their phase two solicitation, they can integrate their capability into a platform and a fielded solution. Gives an opportunity for a small business to work with a major defense contractor and transition their technology from, you know, a small business to a large fielded system.
And you mentioned contractor. Are they working directly with the Air Force, or do you have an intermediary that they're working with?
At this point in the program, they'd be working directly with the United States Air Force.
What types of companies are these? Are they primarily software companies? Because you mentioned high-end displays and so on. So it sounds like maybe some hardware people might be part of this, or what are the companies you're seeking?
We saw a mixture of small businesses, from just software companies to just data analysis companies, machine learning sorts of companies, data analysis, quantum computing, some software and hardware integration companies. So the full gamut.
And how do they know about this, since they are not doing business with the federal government, or at least not with the Air Force at this point?
That's a good question. So the SBIR office and AFWERX, they have a huge network, and that's why we're working with the AFWERX organization. They have a huge network where they have small businesses follow their page, and the announcement is public. You can download the information on how to apply, and you submit your proposal, and off we go.
At the end of phase one, then, you will pick companies that might be promising, but it sounds like there won't be an exchange of money so much as an exchange of ideas that they could then go execute in some sort of prototypical form?
So we receive their proposals, and then we evaluate those proposals and then down select from that pool of proposals to a number of companies for an award. And that first award is called that Phase 1 award. And there is some money exchanged for their customer discovery phase.
But the output from them of Phase 1 is just an idea as opposed to a prototype.
Probably an idea, some sort of like white paper, something that sort of helps communicate to us what it is the company has to offer us. So I think it's more than just an idea. It's probably some sort of level of refinement there, I think, that differentiates an idea from some level of capability.
Yeah, not to make a pun, but you don't want just a blue sky thing to come out of phase one.
Absolutely not. No, we want something that we can clearly evaluate, we can look at, and we can make a determination as to whether or not, you know, like I said earlier about innovation, whether or not this particular innovation would be applicable to our portfolio as a whole. So I think at the white papers and the products that they provide us at the end of this phase one effort will really give us some true insight into, you know, the capability that the small business can offer the United States government.
And when will phase one come to a close?
Well, Tom, we plan on awarding those contracts sometime in the next 2 weeks, so companies will be notified afterwards.
Got it. And then
that's when the reporting period the execution phase will start, and then the 30-day reporting period for the last 90 days.
That's Major Patrick Kowalczyk, along with Colonel Philip Carpenter, both from the Air Force Lifecycle Management Center Simulator Division, speaking with Federal News Network's Tom Temin. They get into phase two of the pitch day. We'll share that after this quick break. I'm Eric White.
Artificial intelligence is often portrayed as a magic wand that will solve everything. But in reality, unlocking the power of AI comes from looking beyond the hype and focusing on thoughtful and realistic problem solving. At Leidos, we're focused on helping our customers adopt AI and machine learning tools with solutions that solve real problems. With a deep understanding of our customers, we're creating reliable, resilient, and secure solutions that look beyond the hype. Learn more at Leidos.com/AI.
We now continue our interview with Major Patrick Kowalczyk and Colonel Philip Carpenter from the Air Force Lifecycle Management Center. They spoke with Federal News Network's Tom Temin, who asked them about what the second stage of a small business pitch day the center is hosting will look like.
Phase two, then, this is more of tangible deliveries in terms of a product or a prototype. And how long will that take?
It depends. 9 to 18 months is typical.
All right. And what about the interaction along the way while they're developing it? I mean, can they come back to you and say, well, we could go this way or we could go that way? And is it kosher for you to say, well, probably better if you went this way?
I think there probably is some opportunity for feedback. I mean, and we're going to have to look at this. So I think, as K-9 sort of alluded to, you know, this is the first time we've ever done something like this. So this pitch day, again, this is something our service acquisition executive is encouraging us to do. And I think it's a great idea, again, especially in terms of innovation and infusing, you know, new kinds of capabilities into, you know, portfolios across the Air Force. So, I mean, we're, as K-9 also mentioned, working with the SBIR's office. And so, you know, we've never done this before, our program office. So, again, we're learning along the way. But I think to the max extent possible, we can have that interaction between us and the small business to kind of, you know, keep that feedback loop going. I think we're going to try to maximize that.
And at the end of phase two, there's another down select?
Yes, sir. So depending on how that phase two proposal and solution works out, And all along the way, along phase two, is we're talking to our customers, our MAGCOMs, ACC, for example, or AMC, and, hey, we're working on this phase two. This is what they can do. Here's how it's progressing, and they start putting money aside, potentially, if it's going well, and if it's something they want to transition into a fielded simulator, we'll have money to award a phase three award and eventually transition it to a fielded simulator into the field.
So that is to say the people that get through this whole process that might have started with an idea, then a white paper, then a prototype, would have the opportunity to get volume contracts. If the Air Force decides, yeah, we could use 50 of these or whatever the case might be, they would still be eligible for that.
That's very possible.
And what about the intellectual property considerations? Do they retain it? Does the Air Force obtain it, or have you figured that one out yet?
It really depends on the contract, but the government does push for government-owned rights on the data.
Because I think from the standpoint of a small business, you know, what if the same idea they came up with or their same piece of intellectual property ended up, you know, with Northrop, you know, or Lockheed or something, and suddenly, you know, they were outbid or they could lose control of it. What is the incentive for them to go through this whole process?
Well, I think to some degree, we would protect their intellectual property. And so it's not as if we're going to get intellectual property from, one of these small businesses and turn it over to Northrop or any other industry partner. I mean, we treat their intellectual property in the same way we treat any other, you know, industry partner's intellectual property. We're always concerned and cognizant of, you know, how we address IP and how we protect IP for our industry partners.
Colonel Philip Carpenter and Major Patrick Kowalczyk are with the Air Force Lifecycle Management Center Simulator Division. They're speaking with Federal News Network's Tom Temin. Hear the rest of our interview with them after one more break. I'm Eric White.
Artificial intelligence is often portrayed as a magic wand that will solve everything. But in reality, unlocking the power of AI comes from looking beyond the hype and focusing on thoughtful and realistic problem solving. At Leidos, we're focused on helping our customers adopt AI and machine learning tools with solutions that solve real problems. With a deep understanding of our customers, we're creating reliable, resilient, and secure solutions that look beyond the hype. Learn more at Leidos.com/AI.
Here's part three of our interview with Colonel Philip Carpenter and Major Patrick Kowalczyk from the Air Force Lifecycle Management Center Simulator Division. They spoke with Federal News Network's Tom Temin.
I wanted to get back to some simulator topics because you tend to think of simulators as operated by people that will be in the left-hand seat of an aircraft. But does it also extend to people that might be operating a refueling boom? Or operating a bomb bay and those kinds of things.
Yeah, so that's a great question, Tom. And in fact, so as I described our device, it's one of the things I didn't talk about. It's like a refueling boom simulator, and we do happen to have some boom simulators. And so there's that capability. And one of the things, and Major Kowalczyk, you know, briefly touched on it too, in terms of networks and interoperability. So back to that piece, we're actually working on some initiatives where we would connect a boom simulator. With a refueling simulator, with a receiving aircraft, and these three simulators could be in locations literally around the world, connecting over a network, doing what we're calling virtual air refueling. So that capability is something that we are making a great deal of progress on. And so it is more than just, like you say, a left seat, right seat. I mean, there's other training aspects, like, again, back to C-17, there's the Loadmaster station that we have. So we have a station for Loadmasters. So, again, you know, I think crews greater than just pilots, I mean, we do have training capabilities for more than just pilots. And, in fact, we even have maintenance training capabilities. So certain MAGCOM, certain platforms have requirements for, you know, training capabilities. So, again, we are more than just simulators, or more than I should say aircraft simulators, but you know, we have some maintenance training capability, simulation training capability, helicopters, pretty much the whole spectrum.
So one vision then for all of this, it sounds like, is you could have an entire flying crew doing a mission, and they could be physically located all over the world or all over the United States in different locations, but virtually they could be on an aircraft, each person doing their own task in a networked simulation sense for refueling or delivering or dropping or bombing or whatever the case might be.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's a fair characterization, and it's probably something in terms of the capability that we have right now. I mean, we do fly. Again, I'll go back to C-17. You might have multi-ship C-17s flying at bases. You know, you could have Charleston, McCord, multiple bases around the Air Force, literally around the world, and crews are training together in multi-ship operations.
And I was wondering, with a couple of aircraft coming online eventually, the KC-46, which has three different refueling systems aboard, and it's a totally different aircraft than what is being used from the legacy planes, does the simulation training environment take place and get developed along with the airplane development so that they're both ready
right
at the same time?
Yeah, and so that's a great question as well. So again, in terms of, you know, how a simulator becomes a simulator, so most simulators are born in the platform program office, and at some stage of the game, the simulator transitions from the platform program office to the simulator's program office, so over to this program office. But ideally, the best case situation is you want the training device available for the crews when the aircraft is delivered, or even slightly before the aircraft is delivered. I mean, because it's, you know, gives them a great opportunity to do some highly effective training outside of the airplane itself.
Sure. And what about trainer aircraft themselves? Are those also simulated? Like, because there's a new trainer coming online.
Right. Yeah. So again, as I just described that process. So yeah. So so for virtually, I would say almost every aircraft, there should be a training device, a simulator device that goes with it. Because again, like I say, from an effective training perspective, you can get some great training. It's also a force multiplier because it allows, you know, folks to train outside of the airplane. So again, I mean, that's sort of the model that I think the Air Force strives for in terms of training devices. Again, having training devices for their platform.
And is one of the measurable metrics of a training system, a simulation system, the degree to which success in the simulated environment translates to initial success in the air?
I don't know if I fully understand your question, but I think maybe...
Let me ask it again. If someone is really good at a simulator, but they could screw up when they get into an actual airplane, is there some is there some correspondence as a metric of simulators that can, so that when one transitions from the simulator to the cockpit, they do just as well as they did in the simulator?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think this also speaks to one of the focus areas that Major Kwanchek touched on, which has to do with performance-based training. So if you have that insight, that level of understanding about how well a student is performing in a simulator, you can also look at how well that student performs in the airplane, and you can make comparisons. And there could even be cases where you might have a group of students going through training, and you might find that one student could be proficiency advanced, whereas another student might need a little bit more focused training, maybe in a specific area. So I think, again, back to one of these focus areas, this is why the whole performance-based training piece is so important.
Sure. Or you could find everybody makes the same mistake when they get up there, and that could translate into some refinement in the simulation environment.
Right. Yeah. And this then also speaks to, like, artificial intelligence. So if you can use artificial intelligence to sort of help tease this out, maybe an instructor didn't see this, but you could start to see a correlation across the entire, you know, student population or even instructor population. So again, I think that one of the key considerations or points here has to do with data and capturing data and understanding the data and how you can use it.
And that's where the analysis and possibly artificial intelligence could come into play.
Correct. Yep.
Major Patrick Kwanchek and Colonel Philip Carpenter of the Air Force Lifecycle Management Center Simulator Division at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Ohio. We'll post this entire interview online at federalnewsnetwork.com. Search Agency in Focus. I'm Eric White.
Thank you for listening to the Air Force Agency in Focus, sponsored by Leidos on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.